next season with some interior players. I just think he's just unlimited as far as the talent level and what he's going to be able to do as a future player. And I saw him on the big screen tonight where Hubs was, you know, 27 points, begin the game 27 points away from a 1,000-point score. I mean, good, you can see the day where Grant Williams obviously has that ability to be a 1,000-plus score with his in his future with the Vols.
And he's so, and the thing about him is, you talk about that game, those little things he does, and they were making that point during the broadcast. I think Damian Fishback did the game today. He said the thing that Grant Williams does with his body, he does so many little things, so many nuanced things that you'd have to have played the game or studied the game a little bit to appreciate how smart of a kid he is to be out there playing at the age of 18, who's supposed to be physically limited. And he's taught me a lesson because back in the summer, I mean, in the Rocky Top League,
Big Orange fans, you watched every minute, you showed your orange, but you're just getting started. Because it's time for the best post-game fan show in college basketball. It's time for the Smart Way Garza Law Firm Tennessee Basketball Overtime. The place where the Big Orange Universe from all around the world gathers to talk about tonight's game. Unfiltered, uncensored, and wholeheartedly unapologetic. Get on the line with us right now. 865-200-5402. That's 865-200-5402. Or you can hit us up on Twitter at Tony Basilio. Now, here's your host of the Smart Way Garza Law Firm Tennessee Basketball Overtime, the man who's been keeping it real for Vol fans for almost a quarter century. Ladies and gentlemen, here's Tony Basilio.
Basketball Jones!
I'm not even feeling like that. I hate it for this basketball team and this fan base. It's been, boy, it's been a... Talk about the air coming out of something. Tennessee, in mystifying fashion, loses tonight in a basketball game that at halftime this evening. Tennessee had 6 turnovers and 6 field goals in a do-or-die basketball game, in a game they absolutely had to have. Against a team that was playing some really inspired, excellent basketball coming in. And thank God Vanderbilt let Tennessee hang around tonight, or that thing could have gotten really ugly. And I give Tennessee a lot of credit. They came with a lot more pressure in the second half on the defensive end, a lot more intensity, but end up falling. And it's not enough. As Vanderbilt tonight wins 67-56 a game that featured Pat Adams throwing a student out of the game tonight and a controversial... LeChance elbow that was not reviewed in an era where we review everything. But, you know, at the end of the day, my contention has been this is not an NCAA tournament team, and getting to the NIT will be an accomplishment for them, and they're now in danger of, if they're not careful, playing their way onto the NIT bubble. And I'm not kidding when I say that. That's how this thing goes. There just wasn't a lot of energy there in the first half tonight, and it's hard to understand that as I bring Tony Jones in now. Smart Way Garza Law Firm, Tennessee Basketball Overtime. And if you want to get in with us, 865-200-5402 is our number. Tony, I welcome you in, man. Mystifying night, brother. Mystifying night, Tone.
Yeah, I mean, it's disappointing. It's disappointing for the fan base. Obviously, it's disappointing for the coaching staff and the players.
Yep.
It's just one that you can't let slip away.
Yep.
When you put yourself in the conversation as it pertains to postseason play and especially the NCAA tournament, you have to be able to protect your home court. You have to be able to beat a team that you beat soundly. Earlier in the year, you have to be able to beat a team that you came in to the game with the same conference record, 7-7. And I'm disappointed in the way the Volunteers came out and started the game, to be down as many as they were at the beginning of the game. Credit to the coaching staff and the players are getting back into the game, but I'm going to have to be a little bit critical. I've praised Rick Barnes and his staff throughout the year, but he didn't have his team ready to play in the beginning of the game. The players didn't understand the urgency of the game. Maybe they thought they could step on the floor and beat a Vanderbilt team that they beat soundly early in the year in Nashville. But that's not the way it goes in the SEC. When you're a competitor and you lose to a team on your home floor, the only thing that you're thinking about is doing the same thing back to them. And Vanderbilt came out ready to play, and consequently, that first half lead propelled them to have a level of confidence to sustain the victory.
And Tone, what was really bizarre about it was that it was almost as if Tennessee, the way they were playing that game, it was almost as if, and here's my thing. It's one thing when it doesn't go offensively for you. We've seen that. I mean, you're not gonna, you know, all the shots aren't going to fall for you. You're going to have some nights like you had tonight where you can't make foul shots like you usually do. Just everything. I mean, it was just a frustrating night in the first half. You can control, however, your level of effort on defense. You can control your want to on defense. And tonight, and really, that's where the game was lost. I mean, the game was lost when you look up, and I tracked the numbers here when we first started this ball game. When you're down 18-4, that's where the game's lost tonight. And the 18-4 deficit was built, yes, with some struggles on offense, but it was built with a couple of wide open layups. In fact, Vanderbilt early on was getting to the 10 with regularity. It was, I thought, if they would have continued to drive, Tone, and I know that we adjusted defensively and went to a zone look, and it kind of worked because we, at halftime, they were struggling to shoot the basketball. But Tony, that 18-4 deficit was born of the fact that we just came out for whatever reason not ready to play, and that was easily our worst half of basketball we've seen out of this team this year.
Very astute comments, Tony, and I'm gonna bring a name that's really, really gonna come to your consciousness.
Go ahead.
Sonny Hill, and obviously a Philadelphia guy, a guy that said you can lose games in the first half of basketball games. I remember him saying that as a young kid. I loved the NBA, and Sonny Hill used to be a commentator for the NBA. And he used to say, hey, you can get behind so far, and when you're trying to catch up, you've expended so much energy that when it's time to win the game, you don't have the energy to win. And that's what you kind of saw tonight. Tennessee got back into the game. We cut it to 1, cut it to 2 on a couple of occasions.
Yep.
But then we got caught up on those screens.
Yep.
And in the last 3 to 4 minutes, Vandy was able to knock down uncontested threes that propelled that margin back to 7, and then it went all the way up to 9, and then Vandy was never headed after that.
You know, Tone, it was, and you're right, because you have to expend all that energy to get back in that game. And you know Vanderbilt, sooner or later, they're going to hit shots. I mean, they just are. So that's going to happen. A couple numbers stand out in that game. Tennessee never, in their building tonight, never led. That is, you knocked me over with a feather. Now, I thought earlier on my show today, I said I didn't like us tonight. This game had scared me. I've been saying that all week. This game scared me. But if you'd have told me we were never going to lead in our building, never going to lead. Vanderbilt has now won three consecutive games in Knoxville, Tone, for the first time since the mid-50s. Rock and roll wasn't even a thing the last time that happened. I mean, I'm telling you, that's... I'm telling you. I mean, Vanderbilt should never beat you three times in a row in your building. In anything, when you're here. It's like Dave Hart's parting gift, is what tonight was. I'm going to go back to our phones. 865-200-5402. In fact, I'm going to bring Mark Griffin in here, and then we'll get some phone calls in. Griff, you just filed out of Thompson Bowling Arena. We talked earlier today. Neither one of us, Griff, is surprised we got beat tonight. Tony was making the point, I'm surprised at our body language and our want to in the early portion of that game. It's just, it was shocking tonight.
Yeah, it was a disappointing loss, Tony. One big difference from Vanderbilt we talked about from last game, this game, is the play of Kressler.
Yep.
And the toughness of this team. I think they've really bought into Coach Drew's system, and they went from zone in Nashville to a tough man-to-man. I originally thought that the Vanderbilt team was going to be a weaker defensive team. Tennessee tried to take it to Cornette, and I think Cornette did a great job tonight altering shots. He must have altered six or seven layups that I counted, Tony. And we just couldn't get him into foul trouble, and I think that was the big difference to keep him in the game. He's such an added dimension, Cornette is, as far as being able to be able to shoot outside. You've really got to honor him. And they were I just think were more effective running their plays, and they were able to dribble drive. And when they drove and then we sunk in the lane, they were able to kick and have open three-pointers. It just seemed like every time I turned around, Kressler was hitting a big shot or Fisher Davis, who I think is an excellent ball player.
Hey, Tony Jones made a great point. Tennessee expends all that energy. They fight to get back in it. And I give his team a lot of credit because lesser teams would have gotten rolled tonight than Tennessee. But Tennessee's fought all year. And I give those kids a lot of credit for the way they fought. But, Tone, those two shots from Kressler, those two three balls were absolute dagger shots when he hit them. Right in the stretch where they had to have him. Vandy was getting ready to give that lead up in that building, and the roof was getting ready to come off that place. And Kressler twice tonight, Tone, hit gigantic three balls.
Yeah, I agree with you, Tony, and I agree to Mark's comments also. I thought Cornette played a super game. He was just a stalwart on the defensive end. He was an intimidator. And SEC referees give guys of that size and that elk, when they show a propensity to be able to deter and block shots, they seem to give them a little bit more leeway. And that inhibited Tennessee at the basket. Offensively, you know, Mark made an excellent point again about their ability to dribble drive, to penetrate and pitch out to three-point shooters. Run their patterns. They ran their weave, perfectly on a couple of occasions and got three balls off of that. They ran, staggered doubles and staggered triples, to get open looks. And then if that wasn't occurring, Riley, LaChance was breaking down the Tennessee defense and then just throwing it back outside for a wide open three. And if it wasn't Kressler, it was Fisher Davis. Let's don't forget Roberson. He played a really good game also.
Tennessee,
yes.
All said though, guys, still had their chances. The game's still in balance. 2:45, it's a 5-point game. Anything can happen. Guys, kind of a long night for the officials. In one way, I kind of appreciate the way the refs kind of let both teams play. There weren't a lot of whistles in that game. Now, there was probably excessive contact going both ways, which there's a tug of war there because there's a balance because you can lose control of a basketball game. And tonight, we saw that with LaChance throwing the elbow. Tone, Rick Barnes came on glued. That's about as animated as we've seen him toward officials. From your vantage point, before I get Mark, Tony, from what you saw, did Rick Barnes have a beef? Should they have wanted the monitor in this era of keeping kids safe and in this era of keeping that stuff to a minimum? Did they err in not going to the screen?
Well, you know, as a coach, and if I'm Rick Barnes, I'm imploring the referees to go to the monitor. I mean, they seem to want to go to it at every chance they can to get photo ops and things of that nature. And if you coach Drew, you're saying, hey, you know, they're denying the chance the ball. They're all over him. They're holding him.
Right. Either coach. That's right.
He's got to be able to say, get off me. And I think it was just a flipper. That's what I think it was, Tony.
I agree.
I think it was a flipper.
It's a non-call.
Yeah, and it was nothing as it pertains to play on in the game of basketball.
I agree with that. Either way.
It wasn't an elbow at his throat, at his face, or nothing like that. And I think the referees did a good job. The referees have a tough job, especially when you refereeing at any venue. I thought they did a decent job.
Yeah, I did too.
Pat Adams, John Hampton, and Steve Skiles, all veteran officials that's not going to be intimidated by the fans. And those are the type of referees you need if you are opposing coach coming into a very pivotal game. So, let's don't blame it on the referees. Let's blame it on not coming out ready to play in the first half.
Hey, Mark, what did you make of the elbow call? Did they get it right in not calling that there and not going to the monitor from what you saw?
Well, I agree with y'all's assessment. I didn't think it was that big a deal as the fans made it out on the replay, but obviously every replay the fans are going to cheer for Tennessee's side. Overall, I thought it was pretty well refereed, because there's going to be a couple calls going to go our way, a couple calls went their way. I thought it was balanced out, and like you said, they let them play, and I'd rather the refs let them play, and they're not perfect. They're going to miss calls, and you know that going in. So you just got to just keep playing your game, knowing you may not get calls either at home or away, but you can't let the refs be a factor in your focus for those 40 minutes. And what I saw more tonight than I've seen before is players talking back to the referees, which I don't like. Either have your captain walk over and talk to the referee, but don't hang your head and disgust and go and mouth off to the referee. And I saw that on multiple occasions this evening.
From us, Mark?
Yes, from us.
Well, yeah, that hasn't happened much this year. It was a weird night all the way around in the arena. I don't know if you guys heard about this. And Tone, I'm wanting to ask your opinion, and then Mark, you guys have both been in a lot of gyms, seen a lot of things. Pat Adams tonight, guys, and Bob Kessling called attention to this on Vol Network. People did on Twitter as well, and also on the SEC Network. They alluded to it, but they didn't expound on it. I have a witness who saw this, one of our people who helps me with some stuff, tells me the following. There was a student tonight, Tony, that Pat Adams singled out and ejected from the game during a timeout. Pat Adams, according to my friend now, Tone, this is what occurred, according to my friend. He was talking to Pat Adams by name. He told him he was terrible at what he does. He never cussed at him. He never used profanity. He simply told Pat Adams he was terrible at what he does. And Pat Adams walked over, saw who it was, and asked to have the guy ejected, and they removed him from his seat. They ejected him from the building. Tony, I would like your opinion on that. If he was not cursed at tonight and nothing was thrown at him, should an official even care to do something like that?
You know what? When you sign up to do a tough job, you expect that you're going to have to be a part of adverse situations in your duties. As a coach, you know you're going to be criticized. You're going to be second guessed. You may eventually get fired for lack of productivity. As an official, you know that you're going to take a certain amount of abuse, and if that abuse doesn't cross the line, then that's something that you got to compartmentalize to be able to not focus on that, but focus on what you're doing out there on the basketball floor. If that was indeed the case, then I don't know. Only Pat and the individual who was thrown out probably could be as accurate as anybody. But if that indeed is the case, Pat, I think Pat overreacted, and you know, you just can't have rabbit ears, as we call them in the coaching profession, where you're listening to people and not focusing on a tough job that you have to do.
Guys, one other thing, and then we'll go to the phones. I'm not going to belabor this point, but at the end of the game, LaChance is going in for a layup, and Turner fouls him, Mark, pretty convincing. It was like a few seconds left. It's an 11-point game. It looked to me like Turner was not thrilled with a guy not just pulling the ball out and ending the game in his building, and probably was frustrated at what had gone on a few seconds before in the sequence. Mark, from where you're at, you're coaching Turner, and I'm going to ask Tone this. Do you have a problem with what Turner did? Because personally, I'm from Philly. I grew up on the Broad Street Bullies. I like stuff like that. I like to see guys that care. As long as you don't hammer and sickle, in honor of Ivan Koloff or the late, great Mr. Fuji, who had the kamikaze necktie, as long as you don't do some finishing move on the guy, but just a hard foul, just to say to somebody, hey, I'm here. You know, you're not doing that in my building. Do you have a problem with it, Mark?
I don't have a problem with it. If I didn't see it at the very end, I exited pretty quickly. But if it was uncontested and time was running out and there was no need to go to the basket and he was to hold the ball and then went in for a layup just to score, to rub it in more or less, then I don't have a problem at all with the player fouling. Just sends a message that, you know, yes, you may beat us in our house, but you're not gonna play this game against me. And I'm sure Coach Barnes probably, well, I can't speak for him, but wouldn't mind that either. It's just more of and it's also frustration on Turner's part too, because I mean, he didn't get to play as well as he could have this evening, I don't think, and overall just taking out some frustration. But getting back to your point, I don't have a problem with someone fouling thin if they tried to show our team up, because you do have unwritten, you know, rule at the end of the game. If you're up, you're not to drive in on a layup if there's less than 10 seconds.
Tone, your thoughts, and then we'll go to the phones on what we saw there.
Well, I think it's a situation where Coach Drew should have probably told LaChance to pull the ball out. I think as an athlete, you know, it just depends on your level of maturity and what you have, the type of moxie you have inside. I've competed against Riley LaChance, and I mean, I think he's a hard-nosed kid, and, you know, obviously the Tennessee-Vanderbilt is an unbelievable rivalry. But you got to have a level of sportsmanship in that particular situation, because that field goal meant nothing. But what if you're taking that layup and Lamonte Turner takes you out and, you know, you get ran into the extension? And something happens of that nature. You just don't want to put yourself in that position to be injured when the game has already been decided.
And by the way, speaking of Dave Hart's athletic department, somebody just called something to my attention. That's twice now in our two revenue sports that Vanderbilt has delivered a death blow to us. I didn't even think about that. Total death blow is what we saw tonight. Griff, I know you've got to run here shortly. So any other final thoughts, and then I'll get to some phone calls because I know you got to go.
Well, like you alluded to early, Tony, we still can celebrate this overall season, even
Absolutely.
Though it's a disappointing loss tonight.
Absolutely.
What's scary, though, for me right now, and this just way the ball bounces, is where does Tennessee go from here? I mean, do they, you know, tuck their tail and take another loss at South Carolina?
And then you're looking at, you know, dropping in the SEC race for the tournament in Nashville, which we're hoping to get a good seed as well. And then what are our NIT aspirations?
That's right.
You know, are we going to be on the bubble
That's right.
for the NIT if you keep losing? Because
yep.
there's so many teams in the Southeastern Conference that are bubble worthy right now
yep.
in the NIT. Well, we don't want to be left out of that. So, and that could happen if you win on a losing streak, because you just never know which direction they're going to go being young. But they're just going to have to, you know, watch the tape, learn from the loss, put this behind. And remember how it hurts, because I'm sure those kids are hurting that locker room right now, and they should be, because of the weak performance for the first half couldn't overcome it. So it's just got to rebound, have short-term memory, and bounce back with a victory at South Carolina.
Thanks, Griff. Great talking to you, man.
Love.
Absolutely love my man, Griff. Tone, he's right. I mean, I don't know how you refocus this thing. But if you think about it, Tone, if these guys are not careful, they're going to fool around and miss the NIT. And that very much, I mean, people could hear me. I mean, this team, like we've said, Tone, when you're as suspect as we are guard play-wise, Tone, anything can happen. We saw that with Lamonte. I'm not picking on Lamonte Turner, but we saw it tonight. When you're that suspect, Tone, anything can happen, right?
Yeah, I agree. You gotta understand that, you know, you gotta, that next wave of teams in the SEC, all of them are battling for NIT berth. Vanderbilt, Auburn, Texas A&M. And you look at Tennessee, their record is 15-13, in the paper. But as far as, tournament is concerned, they're only 14-13
That's right.
because nobody counts that victory against Chaminade.
That's right.
You go on a losing streak here and finish below 500, you cannot qualify for the NIT below 500.
And so, by the way, Frank Martin's team, they are going to be pissed. You talk about pissed. And I'm not sure if they're not gassed. I mean, I'm not sure if they're not, if he hadn't just totally fried them. But if there's anything left in their tank, we're getting it from them Saturday night over there. That's why this thing tonight was a huge, huge, you had to have it basketball game. Let's go to the phones. 865-200-5402. And then I'm going to bring Keith Hatfield in here momentarily. As I thank Mark Griffin for his time. Tony Jones joining. Keith Hatfield is sitting right there. We're going to go to him. Let's get a couple calls in as Tennessee loses tonight. Coach Drew said we were extra motivated coming into that building tonight. On a night where Hubs gets his 1,000th point in a loss. Congratulations to him on the solid career he's had. Let's get our first call in on the Smart Way Garza Law Firm, Tennessee Basketball Overtime. Hello.
Tony Big R here.
Hey, R, welcome in, buddy.
Hey, is it possible to play a freaking point guard sometime in the last 3 minutes of the game? I mean, what in the world? I mean, I don't put it on the kids, but good gosh, what? I mean, is somebody hurt, dying of something that I don't know about? I mean, what are we doing in the last 3 minutes? Just going down there and throwing up crazy stuff.
Are you talking about just our guard play?
I mean,
or are you talking about the rotation of the guards?
Especially towards the end of the game. Let's look at the last 2 minutes and 30 seconds. You know, you got Josh Bone and both Turner on the bench in prison or something, and then we've got Phillips, which I don't really blame it on him, coming down, doing whatever he's doing. Just, you know, when you're only 4 points, maybe 6 points behind in the game, I don't understand that, with, tournament opportunities and things like that on the line. I don't get it. Maybe I'm off.
Tone, we talked about this before. Are you surprised with their guard rotation tonight? Because it really was, it was odd. I mean, now that he mentions it.
Yeah, it wasn't as consistent as it's been the majority of the season. I just think he was looking for someone to step up. And then when you get out to a 18-4 deficit, then as a coach, you're going to look for that.
Yep.
I mean, because, you know, your starters are a little bit disappointing. You know, we don't have the energy level and the intensity that we talked about during practice, that how we got to come out and kind of take this heart away from this team that we handled in Nashville, and knowing I'm sure the coaching staff had to pound in their head that Vandy's going to come in here ready to play because we beat them in Nashville. They've been playing well. And I don't know if it's just a young team or if it's just immaturity or what have you. The body language, the intensity, the focus, just wasn't there. And, you know, as a coach, you try and, you know, plug in and see what can work and what can give me a spark, to kind of, you know, get me off the snide. And that just wasn't forthcoming. You know, as a coach, you're going to do that. You're going to try and mix and match rotations when you don't come out and play well.
Mm. By the way, the aforementioned Rick Barnes, who you were talking about, are pretty tore up at the press conference, but refuses to blame the officials at all. In fact, said a couple times, the breakdowns we had tonight on that basketball floor had nothing to do with the officiating. He also went on to say, as far as the way the game was called or wasn't called, he said, if that did affect them, it's because my players are looking for an excuse, because it had nothing to do with what happened tonight. So good for him for saying that.
Did he take any accountability as well? I mean, how many second-half leads this year would give? I mean, I think the guy develops players, but I have some question marks. When it comes, I don't feel good about you know, Coach Jones, when you and Coach Pearl were here, I felt pretty good in the second half of games if we had to make a quick adjustment. I do not feel good. I see a lot of off-the-court development. I see kids getting better. But when it comes to adjusting quickly in the heat of the moment, I don't see it. I'll get off here and listen to you guys. Love the show. And by the way, the Mr. Fuji reference was excellent.
Thank you. Yeah, because he kamikaze necktie you, and that could have happened. Do you care to respond to what that gentleman said, Tone? Or we want to just leave it alone? Alone.
Well, you know what? I've commended Coach Barnes, yeah, and his staff on what they've done this year. They've been very competitive.
Agreed.
And they played a tough schedule. I like that mentality. I like that philosophy. You got to look at it. Tennessee was picked by the prognosticators to finish 13th.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 13th,
mm-hmm,
in the SEC. But they've exceeded all expectations. So, I mean, obviously the fan base is disappointed because you put yourself on the cusp of getting or being in the conversation of the NCAA tournament, and it's just a disappointing loss. But let's don't take for granted the totality of the year, and it's still a lot of basketball to be played. It's only 3 regular season games, and if we win all 3 of these regular season games and we win a couple games, we could be back in the conversation. If we don't, if we spiral, it could be non-postseason, and that will be a huge disappointment.
Mm, to the phones we go. Hey, Ant, come here. Let me bring Keith Hatfield in here without further ado. Keith, you were at the ball game tonight, as you've been throughout. If losses like this and nights like this and Thompson Bowling and before that Stokely were hazardous to one's health, Keith, you would not be alive. Give me your first thoughts on what we saw as Jordan Bowden, according to Rick Barnes, is under a doctor's care with pneumonia and recently spent the night in the hospital. So prayers up to that young man. Keith, your thoughts on what we saw tonight, because that was a mystifying first half.
Well, you just dig yourself such a hole early, Tony, and you get down 18-4. You don't make any shots. And then in the second half, when you get some momentum and you get the deficit down to a working margin, you have a run of missed free throws. And missed free throws and some of the defensive lapses where you leave shooters to go guard non-shooters. I mean, that's just focus. And look, you're going to have some nights like that, I guess, with a young team. It's frustrating, but it's a family show, so I'm gonna choose my language carefully tonight.
Yeah, it's a family show. maybe once we get past 10 Eastern, Keith, you can let it rip. We'll get into that prime access, category. You can do like an old NYPD blue. Maybe you can show us your rear end like they used to back then.
What I like it, Tony, is now you got a guy who Barnes is going to get reprimanded by the league for what happened at the end of the game. The guy who instigated that problem will set his ass over at the Razzin tonight, drink himself stupid, then go on somebody else's campus and steal another $3,000 tomorrow night. That's the problem I have with the way college basketball is run.
Damn, Tony, he hates the referees more than you do. Go ahead, Prince. Let's get the next call in. Go ahead.
Hey, Keith, tell him really how you really feel.
Oh my gosh! I mean, the truth, guys, is the truth is.
You know what?
Go ahead, Tony.
You know what? You know what? I know all these guys. I know all those officials. I competed against them. I shake their hands before every game, and I have some choice thoughts about them during the games and after. It is a tough job, but the kids deserve more. Kids deserve consistency. They deserve unbelievable effort from the officials, unbelievable concentration and focus. And when you don't focus, and if the story is true of your inside informant, Tony B, of the conversation that the individual who got threw out by Pat Adams, if that indeed is the case, that's something that just can't happen from an SEC official. You got to be a little bit more professional than that.
I told this young man tonight, I said, I would like you and a couple other people to send an email down to the league office and tell them what you witnessed. Because if somebody got thrown out of a game...
Oh, they did. There's no doubt about it. The arena manager.
He's saying but Keith, the word I got is from somebody that was right next to him, no profanity. He basically said, Pat Adams, you stink. You're a terrible referee. You're terrible. Used his name.
Well, that gets you thrown out.
And he got thrown out.
That gets you thrown out.
And he got thrown out.
If that gets you thrown out, it's a good thing that Schausner Adams heard me tonight.
He got thrown out.
I'd be sitting over on Maloneyville Road right now.
He got tossed out for that. We'll go back to the phones.
Because then, of course, I'd like to see Pat Adams or Doug Schaus try to take me out of that building.
Tony likes how fired up you are. Let's get our next call in. Smartway Garza Law Firm, Tennessee Basketball Overtime. To our next call, hello and welcome in on a night where the Vols lose.
TJ, Keith, and Tony, thanks for being in there tonight.
Hey, Benny.
Hey, Benny. Put this thing in perspective. The last time before tonight that Vandy beat us three times in a row in Knoxville, even I wasn't born for the first of those.
Wow.
So, that just absolutely. So, for the first time in my life, they've beaten us three times in a row in Knoxville. And I.
Undamn believable.
It's really a shame that Tennessee picked the worst possible time to play their worst game since UTC. That's.
Yep.
And I think you and Tony are exactly right. I think now this team is battling to stay in the thought process for the NIT, and that's truly a shame that's what's happened here.
Well, I'm going to tell you, and that's why all year all of us on this panel have said the NIT will be an accomplishment, because this basketball team has so many deficiencies, and they're so young, and it's a marathon, not a sprint, and a four-game stretch in January does not a season make. I mean, it's just... And how many times do you have to see it? Look at South Carolina. They have a veteran basketball team that won 24 games last year. You take your eye off the prize for a minute, and you can look up, and you lose 5 of 6, and we're not even in a very good basketball league. Imagine if you're competing in one of those really good leagues where night in and night out, to quote the great Buzz Peterson, you got to keep your head on a swizzle. Imagine if you were in one of those leagues. But, Pino, here's my point, and somebody on Periscope brought this up, and this is where it blows my mind. Vanderbilt has now destroyed two of our seasons.
Yeah.
That pisses me off. I mean, Dave Hart, when he's picking up his hair care products at Sally Beauty Supply tomorrow, needs to come to grips with that. He's run this thing into the freaking ground.
TJ, you're going to have nights when you don't shoot the ball well, but for the life of me, and as a coach, I need for you to explain to me how a young team in this position with all that riding on it could come out lethargic in the first half of a basketball. It makes no sense.
Well, you know, hey, Beano, I mean, you know, that, you know, our kids gonna be kids. They have unrealistic expectations about what should happen instead of preparing about what could happen. And, those young kids thought that, hey, we're gonna win this one, guys, and we just gotta get that South Carolina game. And I'm telling you, I've been around young kids for 20 years coaching this game of basketball at every level, and that's the mentality. And I mentioned this earlier in the broadcast that I praised Rick Barnes and his staff all year. I'm going to have to be critical of them because that team was not ready to play. He's got to know the mentality of his basketball team. And he has to have those guys coming out on all cylinders to a team that when you're a competitor and you've lost to a team, just go back to the playgrounds. Everybody that's on this broadcast right now has played on the playground. And when you've lost the game and then you get ready to compete against a team you lost to, you're going to have superb motivation to go out and beat them the next time. And that team, the Volunteers, just wasn't ready to play at the beginning of the game, and that indeed cost them the game.
That's painful.
Keith Griff made a point before he got out of here, and I agree totally with him. Cornette was the difference in the game, just the way that he altered everything. I believe he had 7 blocks, but there's no telling how many shots he altered and kept us from scoring in there. And until Kyle Alexander or somebody becomes that for us, we're always going to be in trouble defensively, especially with our turnstile guards we've got out there.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt about it. And somebody asked earlier, one of the earlier callers asked why we ended up playing Shambari Phillips at point guard down the stretch. I think Barnes got tired of seeing guys get driven by the likes of Riley LeChance. I mean, I probably would have gotten sick of that probably 10 minutes earlier than he did. I mean, hell, I was sick of it.
They weren't running the team when they were in there.
No. I mean, I saw no reason. I saw no reason. There's not a bigger Jordan Bone fan around here than I am. I saw no reason for him to be on the floor after halftime tonight.
You know, what's sad is, as well as he played in Nashville, and this is what's so upside down about tonight, as well as he played in Nashville, he was equally that bad tonight in that game. And the other guy, you know, God bless him, when he dribbled that ball out of bounds, and I don't know who was doing the game on SEC Network, but he made a great point. Where are you going with the basketball at that point that you're going that fast over there on the end line? Like, what? What could
Maybe he was trying to dribble into the pep band. That's the only place he was headed.
I mean, like, what are you doing? Are we filming a commercial for Holiday Inn Express? I don't know. That's got to get better, guys, going forward. That guard play's got to get better.
Guys, I'm with Rick Barnes. Officiating had nothing to do with us losing the basketball game. We did plenty to do to lose it. But, Tony, Brian Hartman, your daily producer, was correct on Twitter. Pat Adams can pick one person out of a crowd of 13,000 to throw them out and can't tell the difference between Shambari Phillips and Kyle Alexander to send the rack out of the free throw line. How's he picking one guy out?
That's a great line.
And here's what you should do. Don't call him by name.
Gosh.
Call him Webster like I used to when I was over there leather lunging him when Bruce and Tony and those guys were over there winning basketball games.
That is so beautiful. He does look like Webster. Thank you. And I'll tell you something else, TJ. Now that Jordan Bone, who we talked about before, now that he's got that hair going up on the top, he cuts a Sammy Davis Jr. from about 100 feet. He's looking like Sammy Davis Jr. right now. I don't know if you guys have picked up on that.
He played like him tonight.
Hey, Tone, is Pat Adams a good official?
You know, I've competed against Pat Adams for a long time. My first experience with Pat is when I was at University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and we played Prairie View A&M in Houston. And that's a team that's in the SWAC. And obviously, you know, I scheduled the game. I thought we could win, you know, a home and home. And you know, usually when you schedule games like that, it's the referees from the home team's conference that referees the game. Pat was a part of that SWAT crew. He did an excellent job. He prevented us from losing a game that is nowhere in the world we should have lost when we was at Wisconsin, Milwaukee. So I got a lot of respect for him on that accord. When I was at Auburn, he was responsible for us losing to a Texas Tech team, coached by, Tubby Smith, that he was solely responsible for that, for his inability to make the correct calls. And obviously I've competed against him, in the SEC. He's an average official. That's what he is. I don't think he sees the game, all that well correctly. But you know, I just don't think the officiating, was responsible for us losing the game tonight. Steve Skiles is a good official. John Hampton, in my opinion, is a good official. They all seasoned veteran guys. I just think that we should take it upon ourselves to hold ourselves accountable as players and coaches for our ability, our inability to win this important basketball game.
Tony,
I agree with that.
Yeah.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. I couldn't agree with that 100% more. But my issue, and I don't think officiating had anything to do with Tennessee losing the game, but my issue is a word Tony just used, accountability. Rick Barnes is going to have to answer to the SEC office tomorrow morning about the incident at the end of the game with Doug Shouse. Doug Shouse's ass will be doing a game somewhere in Lubbock or some damn place else tomorrow night and not answer to anybody because he's an independent contractor.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
I agree with that. I mean, he'll go referee a Big 12 game or a A-10 game or a game that's in the region. And just like you said, I've okayed those checks. They are between $2,500 and $3,500 a pop.
Exactly right.
Yep.
To the phones we go. It sounds like the pay you get for doing this show.
That's good work if you can get it, man. That's 2 hours work. That's $17.50 an hour. I mean, they're big time attorneys, not getting anywhere near that.
How about their big time talk show host? Not knocking down that kind of coin like me. Let's go back to the phones. 865-200-5402. Smartway Garza Law Firm, fifth quarter. No, that's the football show. Smartway Garza Law Firm, Tennessee basketball overtime. Tony, you know it's been a long week when you're identifying your show as the football program, but I'm trying here, Tony. Let's get our next call in. Hello and welcome.
Hey, guys, this is Sharp.
Hey, buddy, welcome in.
Hey, one thing I noticed, I think we had our first offensive rebound about 11 minutes into the game.
That's a good observation. On a night where we couldn't throw it in the ocean.
And I think we had one offensive rebound for the entire first half. We're just standing around. And I think one thing that happened, they ran this defense on us. They knew we were going to work it inside. Every time the ball went inside in the first half to Williams or Hubs, they double teamed them. And I think that really frustrated, it really shocked, especially Williams. But, you know, how did Dennis Rodman make all his money rebounding? I don't care if you can score or not. They could show the effort. They ended up, I think, with 17 offensive rebounds total. Tennessee did, but I think we only had one at the half.
You know, Tone's point though is really well put, and Tony, what about this gentleman calling? He's got a couple of pretty good points, doesn't he?
He's got excellent points. I mean, you know, you get one offensive rebound in the first half, but you get at least, and just, I was just watching the game, at the comfort of my house, and the announcer said they had 14 rebounds, offensive rebounds in the second half at one point. Now, what is that all about? That's all about aggression. That's all about mentality. That's all about being ready to play. Now, they could have did that in the first half. They just wasn't ready to play. They were standing around. The body language was terrible. And it's such a important contest when you got NCAA aspirations. I just don't understand that. But you know what? When you're dealing with 18 to 22-year-olds, you're not always going to be able to understand that.
It's absolutely, absolutely wild the way that game unfolded tonight. Mm.
Well, I think we ended up 3 of 17 on threes. And I know we talked this week, Tony, you're talking about it's Williams' team. Hubs just so much more athletic than Williams. And Hubs ended up 5 of 11 from the field. And he should have taken a lot more shots. Because, I mean, I'm a big Williams fan too, but he just does not have the athleticism sometimes. And it showed against Kentucky on the road to get off the ground. And Hubs, when he jumps, his head's above the rim every time. You know, and I just would have kept feeding Hubs. I would have put Williams at the high post and Hubs at the low post when we saw that, you know, especially early in the game. I think in the second half, Williams got going, but.
Yeah, and to your point, in the middle of that run in the second half when Tennessee got back in it, Hubs was right in the middle of that thing. There were a couple sequences in a row where he called his own number and he made a couple of nice mid-range moves. And then he came down the third time and called his own number again, and that ball skidded off the rim, and that was pretty much all she wrote in the game. But it kind of does feed what you're saying, which is if he's more aggressive tonight, Tennessee might get out of there with a win. Now, the question about Hubs is, how many times have we said that? How many times have we said that? And the thing about Williams, and I've noticed this a couple games back, Tone, teams now run at him. That's the new thing. The new thing is now we're not going to let you get set. We're going to run at you. Especially if you catch it on the perimeter, we're running at you.
Yeah, to your point and the caller's point, Robert Hubs was really playing well and he got it going, especially during that pivotal point where Tennessee got back in the game.
Sure did.
You know, they're running little horizontal screens to get him isolated,
yep,
on the baseline, and the focus was to get the ball inside. And I think, you know, obviously that was coming from the coaching staff, and what he'd do is just jump over opponent and knock down shots. And he kept Tennessee in the basketball game because Vandy was making shots. Roberson was making shots around the basket. I mean, Cornette made that turnaround baseline jump shot. I mean, that's something that I didn't think that was in his.
That was insane from like 18 feet. What in the hell was that?
Yeah. And, we just couldn't score, because, Cornette was a imposing factor, in the inside, and then we just didn't get any play from our guards. I mean, Lamonte Turner, Jordan Bone was just non-existent out there, and you can't win when you don't have everybody contribute.
No. In fact, we're fortunate they shot the ball sharp as poorly as they did. You were given that 3-point number. Let me give you one I was tracking. At halftime, I call this one of the worst first halves ever turned in the history of the building. Tennessee and Vandy, guys, shot 21 three balls in that first half. Okay? How many did they make, both teams? What do y'all think? Sharp, how many?
You're saying that both teams?
Both teams shot 21 three balls in the first half. How many did both teams make?
One.
Combined.
They made three out of 21. 50 points combined, guys. Vandy had one field goal in the last 6 minutes of the first half. Tennessee had six turnovers and six field goals at halftime. That, if somebody wants to tell me that those were two NCAA tournament teams playing tonight, which is, was the narrative going in, then shrink the field. I mean, if that's what, that was some of the poorest basketball I've ever seen.
Well, I think both defenses played well.
I agree.
I think their defense played well. But our free throw shooting really hurt us again. We were 17 to 26 at the line. Williams was 4 of 8. Schofield was 2 of 5. Hubs had everyone in 6 of 6. And then another thing, when they count these free throws, I think they ought to have another stat for how many front ends of a 1-and-1 you miss. Because that's like missing 2 points instead of one. And we missed at least one front end of a 1-and-1.
Yep.
But anyway,
that's a good point. Admiral Schofield missed those
two of them.
Free throws at about the 5 minute mark, I believe it was. And that was huge right there. I think it might have been a 3 point deficit or a 4 point deficit, and he missed both of those free throws. And then Vandy comes down and executes on a field goal. And I think that was huge. But you again, you know, when you miss that many free throws at home and you put yourself in a hole in the first half, then you're compounding on your detriment to win the basketball game. And that was unfortunate.
Yeah, I just don't see how, to me, going into the game, I think it's the biggest game of the year thus far, and I just don't see how they came out and played like they did in the first half. It's just kind of shocking, especially on the offensive rebounding. But anyway, love the show, guys. See you.
Hey, thank you, brother. Thank you, Sharp. Keith Hatfield, your thoughts on that phone call, then we'll go back to the phones. And by the way, 865-200-5402, Smartway Garza Law Firm, Tennessee Basketball Overtime.
Well, I mean, one thing I noticed, I looked up with about probably 2 or 3 minutes ago in the first half, and Tennessee had only committed one foul. And to me, that's a bad indication. That's not saying you're playing well and moving your feet. If you manage the way the games are officiated today, to get 18 minutes into a half with only one foul, you're not playing hard. Period.
Tony? I mean, it's true. You know, we had one foul. But here's the thing. They let them play tonight, too, though, guys. They let them beat on each other.
Right, right. So, I mean, obviously the dialogue has been not ready to play, not coming out aggressive in the first half. I really can't put my pulse on it. Other than the fact that we were not ready to play in the first half, and we came out with a sense of urgency in the second half, where we garnered 14 offensive rebounds. Whether we turned up the pressure defensively, man to man, we stayed in the game in the end of the first half because we held Vandy scoreless for a number of possessions at the end of the first half, or it could have got out of hand. It wouldn't even been a 10-point halftime deficit. So it just shows you the mentality that we can play with, that we didn't play with in the beginning, and that's the reason why we lost.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. With the energy levels Keith's talking about, we came out with, thank God Vanderbilt couldn't throw it in the ocean. They had some awful, and I mean awful, possessions in that first half when they had a chance to really just say, guys, we're going to make this thing Johnny Ball game. And I mean, they took some quick shots, some bad shots. And I'm watching that game going, we're hanging around. We come out in the second half, guys. We're at that first TV timeout. We've cut that thing down to 4 points. There's no way we're not winning that game, Keith. Just no way.
There's no way we're not winning that game.
No, well, I thought it was going to, I thought at that point, I mean, other than the fact I never got a good feeling about the way we shot the ball at any point tonight, I mean, I thought it was going to be a lot like the Ole Miss game. Tennessee would catch them about the 5 or 6 minute mark and just go past them.
Agreed.
And the thing was, they never got even.
Never sniffed it.
Well, you never really gave them, you never put any game pressure on them. I mean, that's the thing.
Right.
I mean, once you cut a lead like that and you've had a lead, I mean, we've seen Tennessee throw multiple leads like that away. You put some game pressure on them, you get them in a situation where they've got the ball.